Hello, folks. This is Zoe.
I just want to let you know in this special pre-announcement that in the beginning of this episode, you will hear me refer to this show as episode number 67. That is incorrect. This is episode 66, like Order 66 from Star Wars. So please enjoy this special episode 66. And up next is a word from Book of Lies Podcast. Thanks.
So, did you hear about Jen Shaw?
No, I didn't hear about Jen Shaw.
How about Erica? Did you hear about Erica?
I don't think so.
What about that fraud shit from the other day?
Can you be more specific?
There's so much fraud out there and so much shenanigans. You should just tune into Book of Lies Podcast.
Book of Lies Podcast.
Every week we talk about some fraud, some scams, and maybe even some TV shows.
Where there are scams.
Yes, of course. Scams, frauds, and all those things. So tune in every week where we'll bring you a new topic of...
Scams?
That's right. Scams.
So tune in on your favorite podcatcher to catch up on the latest liars, cheaters, thieves, and dirty rotten scoundrels.
That's right. See you soon.
Bye.
Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Welcome. Thank you for joining the Backlit Cinema Podcast. I'm your host, Zoe. That's Z-O or Z-O if you're outside of the United States. And we're going to take a look at the movies of yesteryear. Normally, you would take a look at the movies of yesteryear. But this is a very special episode. I didn't know whether I was going to call it a bonus episode or a special episode, but I've decided this is going to be a special, extra special episode. It's going to get an episode number 67. And I want to thank you for downloading or streaming this show. We really appreciate it. The reason we started this show was to strengthen the bond between my son, Zach, and me, Zoe. We watched movies that I loved when I was growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I'm going to tell you, well, normally I will tell you what Zach saw about this movie, but because of scheduling conflicts, I saw the movie that he didn't. So I'm just going to have a conversation with one of the stars of this movie. He was one of the stars. He was a co-writer and he was a co-producer of this fantastic movie that we're about to discuss. I hereby now welcome this actor, writer, musician of this fabulous band that I just discovered. It pleases me to announce the very special guest on this show, Dean Simone from the movie Game Day. It's me clapping with Dean Simone, welcoming him to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. Great to be here.
Thanks. It is great to have you. It's nice to meet you. And I am so flattered that you have chosen to make an appearance on this show. And I'm just pleased as punch. And
likewise.
So I wanted to ask you a few questions, but I think what I want to do is I want to intersperse like the interview with the next session we have is opening credits. But before we get into the opening credits, I wanted to ask you if do you have anything you want to plug, any upcoming products, projects, any social media handles that you want to put out there, any websites you want to plug?
I absolutely want everybody to go to Amazon and to Vimeo and to go to our website as well, www.gamedaythemovie.com, and download the movie and check it out. I think we're really excited about people seeing it. And of course, plugging Game Day and working a couple other projects right now that are getting ready to get going. I have a new film that we're going to be filming in fall called Sam's Hidden Pieces. And that's something that I'm working on right now. And I've got a commercial coming out. I do commercial acting in that as well. And I'm going to be in the new Morbius commercial with none other than Von Miller and Jared Leto himself. So that's going to be coming out in the next day or two. So
oh, wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's right, right, right.
It's a lot of fun. Really exciting.
Right, right. So I've been listening to a couple of interviews, and you had mentioned Batman as one of your favorite movies that you really like. You have it connects you to your son. Yep. And so I'll ask you about some of the other stuff later on, but I just, how do you feel about being in a Morbius commercial versus the other superhero films? Do you feel like you're getting a connection to some of these films, or is it just Batman?
No, I feel that connection. I have three sons and they are all Marvel fans. And I grew up, my age was more about the comic books. So we had the comic books when I was a kid. So I always had a connection to it. So I was thrilled to be in the commercial. You don't pick and choose your commercials. They kind of pick and choose you. So it was a good one to get. I was really excited about doing it. I really couldn't say anything about it until I think it's coming out today, so I could actually say something. So it was kind of like, you have to keep it on the down low. But that was an exciting one to do. And Jim Beam was a really exciting one to do, to get to be Jim Beam for a couple of years in the commercials. And that was really cool, because I've been known to have a Jim Beam or two every now and again.
It's great when you get to work on a project that aligns with your own personal tastes. It's like, yeah, that's a magical moment. Definitely. So as we talked about, we are going to be talking about the movie Game Day. It is an Italian American family. They gather on Sunday to cheer their beloved Eagles over the Cowboys. As the game unfolds, family secrets are revealed, sparking rivalries in the living room, and that becomes wilder than those in the game. Who will win? So this movie was released November 14th, 2021, produced by No Restrictions Entertainment, and it had great reviews. So I wanted to ask you about that. It was released around Thanksgiving. I remember hearing probably months earlier, that there's been no Thanksgiving movies, but this is a legit Thanksgiving movie.
Yeah. We wanted to release it during football season. I mean, that was kind of like our goal. And, football is a backdrop for the film, but the film is really not about football. The film is about family. And let's face it. So, I mean, we all know what that's like, and in today's day and age, we're so many of us, my family included, I don't know how it is with yours, but so many families are multi-generational, integrated. There's so many aspects of family that is different from the way family used to be 30 years ago or 25 years ago. So we felt like it was a timely story, and Thanksgiving was a good time to release it, because there's a lot of family stuff going on at Thanksgiving. Obviously, everybody's coming together. They're watching games, maybe arguing a little bit, sharing some love, sharing some wine, sharing some turkey, sharing some football. So we thought, this has got to be the right release date. So we worked real hard to get it ready for that day. And we were really proud that it was able to get out during Thanksgiving.
So I can't remember. Does the story take place on Thanksgiving, or is it around Thanksgiving, or was it just in November?
No, it was just a fall time. The main thing was it was during a Dallas Eagles game.
Right.
And
right.
Being a DC guy, you know all about our rivalries there with the Cowboys and the Giants. And what's the name of that team from Washington now? What do you guys call yourself?
Now they're called the Commanders.
The Commanders.
The funny thing is that it's, for one thing, it's not as bad as people make it sound. And the other thing is that for a while, people started getting used to them just being called the Washington football team. And it was like, oh, man. All it takes is time, because people were really upset when they chose to remove the former name, the Redskins. Obviously. And then it for a long time, like a couple of years, they've been just the Washington football team, and people got used to that. So yeah, people are just going to get used to the Washington Commanders again.
It still doesn't feel exactly right. But no, you got Carson Wentz. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Right, right. So, my affiliation with football is barely there at best, right? So I'm not a huge sports fan. Somebody asked me what my favorite sport is. I tell them professional wrestling. That's as close as I can get.
That's my oldest son's favorite sport. So dude, we would go to Stone Cold Steve Austin. I saw The Rock a couple of times before he was, The Rock, when it was just he was the wrestler of The Rock, The Undertaker, all those guys. We went to many of those matches. My oldest son, who is a huge Marvel fan, was also a huge wrestling guy. So I get you. I feel you with the wrestling, man.
Right. Yeah, I just never really got into, only when something like huge happened. And then it's like on all of the headlines, and then I'll get information that way. But as far as knowing all of the details, like the players and their stats, is like, that's all the way over my head.
I don't blame you, man. There's better things to do and bigger fish to fry. So I understand that, man.
Right. But you're hugely into football. So it's you played football in high school.
Yes, I played football in high school, but I was a small but slow, which is a really bad recipe for advancing to a collegiate athlete. I could do the long snap though for punts. I actually learned how to do that, and I was pretty good at it. And I briefly considered playing at a junior college in San Diego. And then I took a look at the other guys, and I was like, you know what? I think focusing on the acting and the music full time now, and I'm going to leave to those big boys and just walk out like in one piece. So that was it. But I did coach high school football for 15 years. So I've always been involved. My grandfather played for the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets, who later became the Philadelphia Eagles. My dad was a college football player. He played at Temple and Trenton State. So we've had football all through the family. It's a big part of who we are. And obviously our love and ridiculous infatuation with the Philadelphia Eagles is something that I know it's not unique to my family. In Philadelphia, it is basically next to the major religions. It is the next great religion is the Philadelphia Eagles. For people, we are huge fans. So yeah, football's a big part of our lives.
Right. So you also played baseball, but did you play basketball as well?
No, again, the small but slow thing. love basketball. I was like the pesky little guard that like passed and like could play good defense. But, you would have thought I had a good shot, but I was like, I was the king of the bricks, man. This is brick man. I love basketball, and my 76ers are looking fantastic. So I am a massive sports fan across the board. Phillies, Sixers, Eagles, of course, and the Flyers we won't talk about because they're horrible. But definitely a big fan of every Philly sport across the board.
Right. So part of sports is sports betting. So sports betting is kind of blown up like all across the country as certain states start to decriminalize sports betting. So have you participated in any of that?
I absolutely hate to gamble. I hate gambling. My band, the Smoking Cobras, plug for my guys. We played so many casinos, and we've done so many casino gigs, and we've had, dealing with the people at the casino. They've always been great for the different various places we've played. I just personally, I hate to lose money. And I just, if I'm going to spend money on something, I want to get something back. I don't care what it is, a hot dog, a beer, a guitar, whatever. If money's going in, I need something coming back, because I can't just be like, I'm not into gambling. So no, but I will say this, because I would be remiss not to say it. I personally feel like the gambling thing, I kind of hate to see it involved where it's at the stadiums now, and it's so prevalent in so much of the game, because I just feel like for a lot of people, they can't enjoy the sport the way they used to, because they got guys in fantasy, so they're they're rooting for the Cowboys or they're rooting for a team that they root for, you know, because it changes it. Let's face it, it changes it. So for me, that's part of the reason I don't gamble, because I just want to root for the teams I like. I don't want the money situation to be involved in there. So that's my thought. Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. I don't want to get involved in gambling. It's like, I can't stand the risk. You know what I mean? I can't stand thinking that I'm not going to get like a return on my money or
nothing.
Like, you know, like win anything. I'm just really risk averse. The more risky the venture or investment, the more money you could win, but then you could just lose whatever you put into it. I'd rather put my money into coin op, like video games or pinball machines, because at least I'm getting the entertainment value out of it.
I totally feel you. I'm the exact same way, you know, and I never really got much of a thrill out of it. I mean, I got to be honest, it just never, you know, when I was working straight jobs, I've been fortunate enough to be able to really make a full blown living out of acting and music over the last 12 years now, almost. Thank you, God. It's been a blessing for sure. And for me, it was just like, even when I worked at places and they did the office pool and stuff, I you know, they were like, dude, I was like, nah, I don't want to. I don't want to have to root for the New England Patriots. I don't want to root for them. I'm not going to have to pick them on the pool if I got to pick the winner. So it's like, ah, no.
Right.
I'm with you.
All right. So horrible. I said, wait, so we go back to the movie. So let's talk about the men and women who starred in this movie. First, we have Dean Simone. That'd be you.
Yeah.
Playing Zach Forte.
Yeah. I just want to say that guy's an insufferable pain in the ass. Really hurt. He's a real nightmare to work with. Just letting you guys know. So, but. Yes. And then there was Val McAdoo, who played my wife, Jamie Forte.
All right. And I'm glad you said that, because I was looking at that name. I was like, how do you say that name?
Cool name, though. I love her name. I do want to say one thing, too. The guy who played my father, Tony Devin, who brilliant actor, man, this man had credits like NCIS. I mean, he's done so much stuff. We unfortunately lost him. He passed away about 3 weeks ago. A real shocker. Just want to say, Tony, we love you, buddy. Thank you for all the love and all the talent. And you are missed, my friend. So want to do a special mention to Tony, who we unfortunately lost a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So, tell me about Val.
Oh, Val.
How is she to work with?
Awesome. Val is one of the funniest human beings I know. She is the biggest bundle of energy and honesty, and she tells it like it is. She pulls no punches. She wears her heart on her sleeve, and she walks it like she talks it. And she's a terrific actress. I love Val. Can't say enough about her. She's my Philly sister, and her and Pete Pastiglione, who played Kip in the movie, and also both of them were co-producers as well. Pete, another great guy. Pete's done a million things, million credits, and they run acting. They run an acting school and workshop as well in the Philadelphia area. So both of them are my really good friends back there, and we're remain very tight. And I'm sure there'll be more stuff that we're going to do down the line. So she's awesome. And then the woman who played my mother, Shelley Breitling, is another brilliant actress and just a phenomenal person. Super, super sweet lady. Loved doing our scenes together. We had a couple really intense scenes with a lot of improv going on. And I'll tell you, man, she's a tough lady. We were going toe-to-toe with the stuff. And man, you could tell she's a mom for real, dude. There's like no faking that, you know. She's a tough lady and just a beautiful actress and a beautiful person. So love Shelley. Awesome.
She seemed really intense. What were some of the improvisations that you were able to do with her?
You know, a lot of the scenes, not every one of them, but a lot of them we would you know, because Edgar, the director, Edgar Michael Bravo, who's a brilliant guy, and we wrote it together. And Edgar always will do some scenes where we stay on the script, and then there's some scenes where he's like, "Okay, play. Let's go off. Let's see what happens. Take the scene to here, then start throwing things out." And man, it's always exciting when that happens. Like the scene, a couple of the scenes, the scene in the garage with me and my mother, which is a very much a scene where there's a dramatic crescendo that occurs in the scene. A couple of the scenes with me and Nick Ruffalo, who played my son, who is another great up and coming, amazing young actor. And he and I went at it a few times. Definitely a lot of the scenes where there was energy, me and Tony, God rest his soul, we had a couple where we were going in there. It's a very strange thing, you know, Zoe, because the movie is loosely based on my family, but it is not by any way, shape, or form exactly my family. It's not a documentary. So there were things where we would go in, and obviously I did put some elements of my family in there and in the dialogue. But sometimes, man, when we would go off and do the improv, it was like, wow, this feels so real. And sometimes the lines would be coming out exactly how they would come out in regular life. So it was pretty exciting, man.
Is improv part of the normal like type of thing that's introduced in when you're learning to act, or is that something that you do separately? Like you've learned to act, you've gone to acting school or whatever, and then you have to additionally do like an improv classes.
Yeah, it is a different aspect to acting. And yes, you're absolutely right. There are numerous classes. There are different types of improv. There's comedic improv. Like I had taken some classes at Second City. There's dramatic improv, and you find yourself a lot of times, mostly in television and in commercials, you rarely have the chance to improv. They will occasionally say, give you a chance and say, well, throw a button on it. Maybe we'll use it. Maybe we won't. In commercials, in television, forget it, man. It's like, you got to be on every single word, every note. It's got to be as written and as it is. You know, plays are that way as well. Theater is that way. So it is definitely a different thing. And it is, there are numerous courses being taught on it, and people take the classes. I've always had a natural affinity towards improv. I love it. I love working improv, whether it's dramatic or comedic. And even if it's dramatic, I like finding the comedic elements within the improv. So I love it. Not every director gives you a shot to do it, and not every production is copacetic with it, but Game Day we were, Edgar is, and it's exciting when you get a chance to do it. It's really, you know, man, are you a music fan?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Are you a fan of jazz?
Not as much as
not you should okay.
be, right? Well,
no, music is a whatever speaks to you, man. But it's very much like it is like jazz at its finest, you know, where you've got people that are able, and there's a theme, and they are playing these emotional notes as opposed to audio notes. They're playing emotional notes within this theme, and you have to come back and get to the point of where you were going, and then you can stray and come back. So yeah, it's great. It's a beautiful thing, man.
That's pretty awesome. So we mentioned, of course, Tony Devon, who played Ben Forte. We mentioned Shelley Britling. She played Teresa. And
Nicholas, one son. And then we had Mike Jensen, who played my other son, Vince, who's another brilliant actor. This guy, man, you talk about a voice. This guy can sing, man. Incredible pipes, man. So he's not only a terrific actor, but he's a great singer too. Michelle Marciano, who played my ex, another great actress. She's another multi-talented person who also is a phenomenal dancer. She choreographed. She did a lot of dance work. So she's fantastic. Loved working with her. Loved the scenes with my sons. Loved the scenes with her. Yeah, no, that was the cast was Really, really awesome.
Right. Did we mention Michael Jensen? He played Vince.
Yeah, Michael was the guy I was just talking about. Michael is the guy who played Vince, who played my older son, who in real life.
The older son. Right.
Who in real life is a Batman fan. And by the way, we did originally have in the script that one of the gifts he received was a Batman comic, but for some reason, I don't know, that got annexed for some reason, but yeah, that's him. And then Britt Leone played Nick, Nicholas's the middle son, played his girlfriend in it. And Britt's a great up and coming actress. I think she's just terrific, and she does an awesome job. Oh, Kenneth McGregor. Kenneth is amazing. And Kenneth played, here we go. We're going to keep the Marvel connections. Kenneth played Magneto's father in, I can't remember which one, but he's a great, terrific actor, man. I learned so much working with that guy. And he is a sweet, cool dude, man. And he just knows his stuff. He's awesome. I think we got everybody. Frank Volpe played the bartender, and he did a great creepy job at being that creepy.
He was appropriately creepy. I think you probably mentioned her, Clorinda Marie Cook.
Clorinda. Yeah, she right. she played the mom, and she did a great job too. And the mom that none of us really want, the over judgmental mom. Who has troubles of her own, and she had drinking issues. You know, one thing that we tried to do with all of the characters is show the good and the bad. One thing I know that you are a film historian, and you watch films with your son, and you talk about films from the 70s and 80s. And one thing that I think it's really important to note that was definitely a style in older film is there was always redeeming qualities in the bad characters, the bad guys, and there was always foibles and anti-hero qualities in the good guys. So I'm really about, as a writer and as a filmmaker, always exploring the duality that we all have as human beings. Because let's face it, man, you know, unless your name is Jesus Christ, you are not going to be all good, man. You're going to, you know, there's going to be issues. And unless you're Adolf Hitler, you're not going to be all bad. You know, there's balance in that. We try to show that. And I felt like every member of the cast really embraced that and really ran with that. And also a shout out, if I could, to Mikey Hensel, who played the little dude in it, my little son, Cash. And right. he did such a great job, and man, he was a trooper. You know, some of those hours on the set, you know, they get boring for kids that age. He would rather have been out playing baseball or playing soccer, but you know, he was there, and he did a great job, and he was a really fun guy to work with. So the cast was a blessing. So it was a massive blessing for us, and all Philly people, man, Philly people.
Right. I was about to mention that. Yeah, they're all from Philadelphia. So you've been able to keep it authentically Philadelphia, and maybe a few Italians in there too.
Just a couple of those Italians.
All right. Well, that's great. So this movie is directed by Edgar Michael Bravo, and you and him, I hear, have been friends for a very long time.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Edgar was I got my SAG card. We talk about this, and I'm trying to figure out either I got it. I did. This is really, I'm going to date myself a little here, but either it was the same week I got cast in his movie, I got cast in this other movie called They Call Me Bruce, which was a parody on the Kung Fu movies of the 70s, starring this comedian, Johnny Yoon, way back in the day. So I can't remember if I got it through Edgar's movie or I got it through this movie, because it was literally in the same week. But I was 19, and, you know, that's when I first met Edgar. And then as it, you know how it is in life, you'll stay close with somebody and be involved in their life. And then we disperse and we go in different directions. And then somehow we come back into each other's lives. And so that's kind of how it's been with Edgar, where, you know, we'll go years without seeing each other. And then we see each other. But I will tell you this, every time we see each other, we have always spoken the same shorthand when it comes to film and the things that we really believe in with art. He's really honestly been like a big brother to me with a lot of things. I've learned so much stuff from him. He's a great guy and a bright guy. And I enjoyed every single moment of writing with him and being directed by him. I'm sure there's going to be more projects up ahead with Edgar and me doing things together, because we enjoy working with each other.
Wow. That's a beautiful thing. You also co-wrote the movie with Edgar. So how was that experience?
It was great. You know, I'm my process of writing, I'm a serial writer. I'm the same way with songwriting, because I'm a songwriter as well. It's very difficult for me to write unless I must feel like, okay, I've got to put this on paper now, or I've got to work this out and write it now. If I'm not feeling it, I can't force myself to write something. And what we did was we talked and talked and talked about things, and we came up with ideas and we discussed it, and we got so passionately deep into the characters and the circumstances and where it was going and what we were going to do with it, that by the time we actually sat down and started to write it, and when we wrote it, I was living here in LA, Edgar was living in Atlanta, and I would write and I would send him stuff, and then he would write and send me stuff, and we would kick the pages back and forth. Man, so this is the beauty of this Zoom internet world that we live in, man, is that we can do those things, you know. And we literally were like internet eyeball to eyeball every day for 6 months, and we wrote it during the whole COVID thing. And I'll tell you something, it was like, I mean, it was just like manna from heaven. I mean, everything literally parted when we got ready to film. It was the first lull. So the restrictions got easier. It made it simpler for us to do it. Thank God nobody came down with it in our crew or in our cast. So it just, man, it was a blessed deal right from the get-go, man. It was everything came together. Sometimes that happens.
Right, right.
Sometimes it doesn't.
So you've mentioned that this movie is partly inspired by your own family experience. Did Edgar put anything of his family in this movie?
That's a really good question. I think that Edgar is one of these guys. I mean, he could speak for himself about it, but you know, he's such an observer. He is one of the most one of the keenest, most observant people that I know. So I think that a lot of the suggestions and the changes or the things, the short answer would be yes. I think that there were many things that he gleaned from his family and his family situations that he interjected in there. I mean, he'd have to answer that to know exactly, but yes, I think he has. And also, not just our families, but families of people close to us, you know, like the drug addiction situation with the middle son, with Marco. My middle son, who the character is loosely based on, he's a straight arrow. Like, drugs aren't even remotely an issue or a component in his life. But I have had many friends with kids who've had massive drug issues. So it was all based on reality. It was based on the things we saw, the things we've lived. I'm a musician, so you can imagine I've been around people that have had drug issues and stuff. I've seen it. So we tried to, more than anything, though, we tried to tell the truth, and we tried to tell things, even if it wasn't based on our own life, it was based on a truth that we either were a part of or a truth that we witnessed. And we try to tell it without judgment, tell it with love, and tell it with empathy and compassion. Did our best.
Right. I think you did a wonderful job.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
So let me ask you, the music is by Luke Mambria. So as a musician yourself, did you have any input in the choice of who was going to do the music for the movie? I knew you're a co-producer, so.
That is a great question. No, actually, I did not. Edgar, who, by the way, Edgar is also a musician and a really excellent guitar player. Edgar has very particular viewpoints about how music, especially the music that the scoring that sits in the film and how it goes. But I'm more of a curator of music type of guy. I love the most obscure music and songs and eras. So I came across this public domain version of the Mills Brothers singing Funiculi Funicula. So that was my musical contribution to the movie, because I heard it and I thought, first of all, I love the Mills Brothers. I don't know, are you familiar with the Mills Brothers? You're pretty young.
No, I'm not familiar with the Mills Brothers.
They're way before both of our times, man. But the Mills Brothers were this amazing group of African-American singers in the 20s, literally brothers, voice blend so beautifully, joyous music, fun, a style that was amazing. So to hear them singing this Italian traditional opera song and putting their twist on it, with almost beatbox style background vocals and stuff going on, I just felt like, man, dude, this is like the bittersweet celebration of life coming from the perspective, the voice that was singing was a perspective that it felt pain, but was saying, I'm choosing joy, even though I felt pain and I've been through these things. I mean, obviously to be an African-American artist, musician in the 20s was probably a pretty difficult and challenging road, but that music is so joyous and so celebratory. We just thought, this is it. So when I found the song, I call up Edgar, I'm like, I got the song. And I send it to him and he called me back. He's like, oh my God, dude, this is it. This is the song. This is like perfect for it. So that was my musical contribution to it. But as far as Luke, that was Edgar's choice. And he's a young guy and a really talented composer and film scorer. So I was very pleased we got him.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty awesome. So speaking of music, transition, that was a pretty good segue. Speaking of music, your band, the Smoking Aces, you have a habit of touring around the country. It's usually around the spring and summertime.
Yeah, the Smoking Cobras. I don't want anybody to get us. The Smoking Aces is a pretty cool movie.
Did I say Smoking Aces? I'm sorry.
The Smoking Cobras. Hey, first of all, thank you. Thank you for asking about my beloved Cobras and my bandmates. Steady Eddie B, Ed Beardsley is our guitar player and our keyboard player. And then we got Robosaurus. Tony Russell is my 6'6" bass player, brother in the band. And then the Machine, Kevin McShane, is our drummer. Never have I ever, and I've been in way too many bands, man. Let me tell you, I have never been in a band that I can honestly say is more of a band of brothers. We love each other. We love playing together. We love playing for audience. It's all about the positive energy, the positive message, letting people know that life is good. We're all to be together, every race, every color, every creed. It's all about the love and the music and the good times. And I'll tell you, we started out, no joke, man. We started out, we played a retirement party in the guy's backyard. And in this this woman, Norma Shear, who has hired us numerous times since, but we played in her backyard for $300. And that was our first gig. And since then, by the blessings of God, this band has been, we have played Dodger Stadium. We have played in Tokyo. We have played in Deadwood, South Dakota. You name it. We have played all over the country and we're getting ready to roll it out again, man. We just played a concert last week and we're getting ready, playing a bunch of dates coming up this summer, which we're going to be having up on the on the website. And man, it's been awesome. It's a good right. time.
It sounds
and those
great.
Songs are great, man. You can't miss with those songs, you know. Isley Brothers songs, Chuck Berry songs, Elvis Presley songs, man. These songs have incredible depth and they speak to so many generations, man. You know, there's such reality and truth and love in that music. All we have to do is get up there and not screw it up, man. So
now I'm going to be honest, right? So doing my internet searches on you, stalking you, so I can ask some intelligent questions preparing for this moment.
Great question. And, so and far.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So what happened was I came across this actor and he has this band. And I was like, how good could this guy sound? He's an actor and he wants to sing too. Nobody can be that talented. So I'm clicking on the links and I found a video of you guys singing. It's like, not only do I like all of these songs, but this guy can really sing. It's like, and this band sounds great. I was like, oh my God, I'm not totally jealous because you're not just talented, you're multi-talented. And you're really doing it. Your band is coming down to the DC area?
Absolutely. We were going national and going even international, as I said, Tokyo and stuff. And then COVID shut it down, but we are talking getting things going on with some agents in different areas. And yes, we will absolutely be going to different places in the country. And man, I got to tell you, I am so blessed every day. I thank God that I have a chance to make a living in acting, which I adore acting and writing and making movies. And I adore movies and playing music with these guys. It's a blessing, man. They're great musicians. And they're great guys. And I'll tell you something, Zoe, we love every second of being on stage. Dude, it's great. I'm a runner. I run like between 7 and 10 miles every day. I'm a big runner. But I can tell you right now, when we play a concert, that's the biggest workout that there is because I don't stop running for the entire show. We're all jumping and having a good time. And man, that's what it's about. So I appreciate you appreciating it. We put a lot into it. It means a lot to us, man. And thanks, man. Thank you for letting me plug the Smoking Cobras. You're people that has brought it up. And I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, I put all the links for the Smoking Cobras and for your websites in the show notes because I really want people to check it out. It was really good.
Thank you.
The other thing was that you mentioned that like one of the songs that you cover is Elvis and segue back into movies again. There is a movie called Elvis coming out. Are you excited about that?
I am totally excited about that. And the actor, what's his name? Austin, like his name's, it's escaping me. I should
know. I didn't get his name.
This kid is a star already. And he looks like he's going to do such a phenomenal job in this. He's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Have you seen that one?
I haven't seen it, but I know about it.
One of my favorite movies. I love Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He plays Tex from the Manson family in that. And he does a fantastic job. I've seen the trailers. My middle son, who's like, 25, but he's grown up massive Elvis fan. My aunts saw Elvis. Like I grew up Elvis big time. In my family, with my parents, it was about Elvis, Dinah Washington, Ray Charles. That was like the big three, when I was a little kid, and Frank Sinatra. That was like all, we had a bunch of records and I just listened to that stuff all the time. So Elvis is so near and dear to my heart. So I'm definitely, the day that comes out, I will be there in line with my popcorn and my ticket to see that. I'm very curious. And Tom Hanks plays the Colonel in it, right?
Right. Tom Hanks plays Colonel Parker, I think his name is.
Yeah.
So yeah. And when I saw the trailer, it was the first time I realized I've always heard the name associated with Elvis, but when they showed the clip of Tom Hanks speaking, it's like, oh, he's speaking with an accent. Oh, so Colonel Parker was an undocumented immigrant, right? So
Norway or someplace like that, man.
Yeah.
I know people about him. He kind of invented this character of himself. So let me ask you a question. So now I don't know if you're old enough to have been a child of records. You probably, were records happening when you were a kid or no? You're post-record.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I was growing up, there were records, there were 8-track tapes, and there were regular cassette tapes. Okay, so 8-track tapes were on their way out, but you could still see them in cars, the players in the cars. And like, if you're like, if you go over to a family member's house, there'd be 8-track tapes just like strewn all over the place.
Yeah, man. The car pop in there, of course. So here's my question to you. What is the first 8-track 45 album? What's the first piece of music that you remember going to the store and buying? You heard it on the radio and you were like, I got to buy that. I got to have that. What was the first one?
That is a confirmed memory. I can tell you that the very first album I ever bought with my own money was George Michael's Faith.
Man, you know, my wife's going to love you, man. Cause I think that was hers too. And she loves George Michael, man. I mean, just like, and there's a brilliant man and a tragic story, man. But he was like,
right.
What an amazing artist, singer, writer, man. Incredible.
Right.
So you went
right.
down, you're living in Washington, and you went down to, gosh, what did we have in those days, man? Like out here in LA, there was Licorice Pizza. I don't know what was the big music store back in DC during that time?
There were a couple. I think what I probably went to was Sam Goody.
That Sam was one Goody. Of the good.
Right. Sam Goody Entertainment Now, right? and then there was another one. I want to say it's called The Wiz, but I'm not sure. It probably was The Wiz. It was a record store called The Wiz. They also sold Pimp Clothing. I don't think I went in that store. But
so when you were a kid, were you were you in the skateboard kind of thing, man? Was that your vibe? Or were you like more like, you know, I don't know, more in the jock type of thing? Well, you said you weren't that into sports, man. So
No, I was more of the, like I'm an artist, illustrator. So, well, not professionally, that's what I did growing up. I drew pictures a lot. You know, I was that kid drawing pictures and notes and whatnot. I was into comics, so I'm constantly drawing superheroes and reading comics. And I read books. Like I read all types of books. My favorite book series growing up was Encyclopedia Brown. So, yeah.
Wow. All right. Yeah. And Frank Miller. Were you a big Frank Miller guy, man?
Not a huge. Not a huge fan because I didn't really have access to him like that. So many of the comics that he did were like trade paperback, or they were if he was writing like regular series stories that I wasn't all that familiar with. But I really liked John Byrne. He was one of my favorite writers growing up. He was a writer and artist. Like he drew his own comics. One of the comics he did was the Next Men, and I gobbled those up. I also like Alex Ross. He's another one of my favorite artists. You're probably familiar with Kingdom Come, this 4-part comic book series. So
I don't remember that. I've heard the name, but I didn't experience it myself.
So Kingdom Come, I don't think he wrote the story, but he illustrated every page of that book. So it was like, instead of comic book panels that are drawn, they're painted and they're absolutely beautiful. And so this is like an alternate future, you know, like Superman's basically retired and all the new superheroes are kind of running amok and causing problems. Like you have a hero you have a bunch of superheroes that are more problems. They're causing more problems than they're solving. So Superman is tasked to go like back, like get out of retirement and basically round up some of the more rowdy superheroes.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know this. Them. My son was into this. This is a DC. Right. This was a DC right. comic. Yeah. Right. When my son Nick hears this this podcast, he's going to be, you should let me talk to him. I know all about him.
Right. And then the other thing that Alex Ross did was, I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's called Marvels. So this is a project that he did for Marvel Comics. And this is a fascinating story because this is a perspective of superheroes, but told from the perspective of an ordinary man. So you follow this reporter and he's like doing stories as just as superheroes are starting to emerge. So in this version of the origin of superheroes in Marvel Comics, the Human Torch is the first superhero, or one of the first. And then earlier than that, I think there was Namor, but I can't remember in the events of the story who came first. But so the guy, he's following all of these superheroes, writing about these superheroes. And then he'll get too close. He got his eye taken out. So now he's this one-eyed reporter trying to do interviews with people who's had contact with superheroes. And all of these panels are beautifully painted. So
I'm going to have to ask Nick, my son, about these, because I know he knows all these things you're talking about.
Right.
Human Torch, didn't the guy who ended up playing Captain America, wasn't he the Human Torch?
Right. So that's that's one of the famous Chris's in Hollywood. So that is, what's his name? Chris. I can't remember his last name right now.
I'm terrible with names. Yeah. I should be better with names, and I'm not. What was it? Chris, I can't think of it. But anyway, right. I do remember him in that, though, for sure.
So, yeah. And the Human Torch I'm talking about, there were actually two Human Torches in comics. So there was the original, and then there was the one that was in the Fantastic Four. So they do that in comics a lot. They repeat their heroes or they recycle their superheroes a lot.
Why not? And what? Right. And who are we to argue with the way they've handled all of that stuff, man? My God, it's amazing. And there's so much that that goes into it. I mean, it's just an incredible world. In working and doing the commercial I did the other day, they're so very and understandably so protective of every aspect of it. And they really always want to make sure that it's being done in a certain way and being, you know, presented in the correct way. And, you got to really love it. I mean, it's sort of understandable that Disney is now kind of, you know, in control of a lot of that stuff because, you know, Disney is really very much the same way. I mean, Disney is so... obsessed with the product being done in a certain way and presented and represented in a certain way that I think that they're good guardians of that galaxy, no pun intended.
Since we're talking about superheroes, let's take a little detour. You had talked about on an earlier podcast that you were excited about the movie The Batman. So have you seen it yet with your son? And what did you both think about that one?
Yes, we did see it. And in fact, this was a really cool thing. We went to see it with my 14-year-old and my oldest son and my wife. We went to see it at the same movie theater in Burbank that my oldest son saw the Batman with the first one with Jack Nicholson and with Michael Keaton. So it was really cool. You know, you talk about a complete 360 and it coming around. That's exactly what it was. Yeah, I liked it. I thought Pattinson did a really fantastic job. I thought that it was beautifully shot. Zoe is just like such an incredibly good Catwoman. She just was like, she had it down. I mean, she was just so good in it. And the only criticism that I had of it was just visually the darkness of it. I started to get, it was like physically affecting me, man. It was like, this is so gloomy. Still gorgeously shot though. And very interesting that two things that I found interesting, and then I want to see what you think with each thing. One thing that I found interesting is they really showed the human aspect of him in that, you know, he was getting beat up. Like when he took this, you know, he's got bruises and his face was bruised. And it was like, you know, this guy has no super strength. He is a human in that, you know, uniform costume. And he's getting beat up. So I thought that was pretty cool. Did you like that aspect of it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've come to expect it in Batman films. Like if he takes off his shirt and he doesn't have a couple of bruises on him, you know, I got to wonder if they're taking that character seriously. Like you've seen a little bit of it when Ben Affleck played Batman in the Justice League movie. So if he's going to take his shirt off, he's better have some cuts or something. Right.
And apparently Ben didn't have enough cuts because he didn't get enough muscle cuts because it was like, oh, poor Ben, man. But I thought that was really well done. And I thought that the way he handled, you know, the character was brooding as the character should be. But I also do feel like there was like I really felt that there was a lot of depth to the psychoses and the problems that he had. I thought they got into that pretty good. I like that about it a lot. And then the other thing was, I thought that they showed one aspect of him that I think doesn't get, I don't know, it doesn't get talked about enough or explored enough in the movies, is he's a hell of a detective. You know, Batman right. is a detective, man. He's like the super sleuth.
Right.
And yeah, that was together.
Yeah, that was the thing that had been hyped about this movie, was that like the director, he wanted to make people, he wanted to let people know, like before the movie came out, but that this is Detective Batman. We want to show you Detective Batman. And yeah. I really enjoyed the film. I really liked it, but I have heard like people who didn't like it had different reasons for not liking it. So one of the things that they didn't like, which kind of relates to Game Day, was Batman had it wasn't like he loves Alfred, like Bruce Wayne loves Alfred, that's his father figure, but right. he was kind of bratty towards towards Alfred. So I don't, because, you know, I can't really call him a butler. He doesn't like seem like a butler. He seems more like, he's almost like a business partner, but it's more like a father figure that
he is.
This is the man who raised him.
He raised
him. So yeah, he had a really, sometimes a really fraught relationship with Alfred. And that goes towards Game Day, because in Game Day, there is a lot of this going on. So you talked about being affected by the darkness in the Batman movie. How did you guys, when you were filming, dealing with the emotional stress, seeing as it was a very angry movie, right?
It was very angry. I fully agree. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, Zoe, that's a very tricky place to go to. And the decision that we made was, if we were going to go there, we really had to go there for real. And there were times when I think that the kids, all the kids, including my character as a son, were disrespectful to the parents. And then I think that there were times when the parents weren't as loving and respectful to the kid as they could be. And we wanted to go down that path where you were looking at it and it felt a little uncomfortable, not just in a voyeuristic sense that you were a fly on the wall watching the situation in the family, but I think a lot of our families, my family, I can speak to, and a lot of families say things, you say things to your parents say things to you, you say things to your brothers or sisters, and you regret it, and you know it's wrong. And then the emotion comes in and it carries it even further. And not only is the content of what you're saying wrong, but the emotional charge that you put into those words are wrong. So we made a decision that we weren't going to pull any punches with it. And we understood that in some respects, especially for people who come from more sedate families and less crazed loud families. I definitely fall into the crazed loud family category, but we didn't want to sugarcoat it and we didn't want to lie about it. And the most important thing is, you know, I'll share this with you. You know, my wife is, she is like the ultimate white girl. I mean, she is, she comes from like the very more of a proper family. They don't yell at each other. They don't scream. They're not loud. It's none of that stuff, right, man? So she came into our family and she said, I can't believe how loud you guys are. I can't believe. And she's like, and the thing I really can't believe is that you yell at each other. And then you're totally good with each other 2 minutes later. It's like, it comes out, it blows up, it's ugly. And then there's no grudge. It's like we're just moving on. And that's reality to my family. I don't know. It's not always reality to everybody's family. But we felt the need to be honest about it. And admittedly, I don't know if that's everybody's cup of tea. But if you're going to tell the truth, then you got to tell the truth. You can't tell the truth like, well, I'm going to tell the truth as long as it makes me look good. You know, everyone else is yelling. Everyone else is saying disrespectful stuff, but I'm not. I'm the one guy that didn't do that. But that's not true. And that's not reality. So we had to show how we felt was the case of it. I'm sorry, you were going to say?
No, I was just thinking, one of the characters was a little bit quiet. I think he played one of your sons, or I couldn't remember if he was your son or your brother.
He's my son, Vince. The one whose birthday it was. Right.
Right, right. So he was much more reserved, right? Kept his feelings to himself. He kind of lashed out a little bit during mm-hmm. part of the movie, but mm-hmm. he was at least kind of, he would pull away, it seemed, from a lot of the arguing and stuff. So as an actor, how do you decompress from that sort of anger? Like you're filming a scene where you're yelling and screaming, or you've had a day of filming where you're bringing up all those angry emotions. So like after the filming is done, was there a way that you decompressed? Did you go home and had a Chardonnay, or did you have a hoagie to kind of wash those angry feelings away? What did you do to deal with that?
Well, two things. The first thing is, as I had mentioned to you, I'm very into working out and running. I'm like usually between 2 and 3 hours every day of running, biking, lifting daily. So that is definitely something that helps me keep things in line. Okay. For me, like I think it's the case for a lot of actors, and I think a lot of times we're, you know, hesitant to say this, and I don't know. I mean, it sounds to the average person that is an attorney or a teacher or a nurse or, you know, a person that, you know, works on cars or whatever their profession is, there is a semi-sociopathological aspect to being an actor. Here's the flip side of the coin. You have to be extremely empathetic to people and understand people's circumstances and be able to take that in and understand it. The flip side of it is, for me, it marvels my wife, because I can really access an emotion, super feel it, super get hit with it, and then I'm on from it and I can just move off of it. I'm blessed that way. I've never had those issues where I believe in not faking an emotion when you're acting. I definitely adhere to the method approach to people like Stanislavski and you know, Stella Adler and all those, you know, all those great teachers. I believe in that. And as does Edgar too, by the way. But in terms of when it was over or the scene was over, for me, I could shut it down. I could move on. I could step out of it and I could step back into it. But I will tell you this, you said something a few minutes ago that was true. It is an angry movie. And I was listening to a podcast by Rob Lowe not that long ago, and he was saying as a younger actor, he had a very difficult time accessing anger and playing anger in a scene. So I got to tell you, man, anger is always right there, right below the surface for me. So, man, I got no problem whatsoever stepping in those shoes and stepping right out of them again. So that has never proven to be an issue for me. I don't know. I hear about people like, you know, Heath Ledger, who obviously, you know, Joker almost, you know, killed him. A lot of people say it left, you know, irreparable scars on him. That's not me. I believe in the reality and the sanctity of bringing something real to a character, but I can step out of it.
Right.
With the occasional hoagie.
Right. Like you, I am inches away from anger. Like I can go 0 to 100 in a moment, like just a little thing that can set me off, and it is not healthy. Right. But I was like, just earlier today, I was trying to use the Zoom. I had an earlier interview, and the thing would not log on. And it was like, and I was instantly angry because all the connections were there. It just didn't want to work. Right. So yeah, I was right when the interview was supposed to start. It's like, yeah, I'm driving in traffic. It's like, you know, it's so easy to get instantly angry. And And I didn't think that I was that way, but as I examined my behavior, like, no, I'm that guy. I'm that guy that gets angry instantly. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about when you say the anger is right on the
surface. Most of us are that guy. So let me tell you, most of us are that guy, man. We live. Right. Hey, man, let's be honest. It's a pressure cooker out there. I mean, you know, you got a mortgage, run a second mortgage on your house to pay for gas right now, man. We've gone from coronavirus to, you know, this terrible situation that's going on in the Ukraine. And, you know, we've been dealing with so much stuff all the time. I mean, and we're bombarded, man. I mean, at least when we were kids, like, it wasn't like news is on 24 hours a day and it's right. coming out all the time, you know, and our phone's going off and, you know, we're getting alerts and we're getting notices and notifications, and we could walk away from it, man. You could do your art. I could do my sports. I could play guitar. You could hang with your friends and go to the record store. We could do that stuff, man. That doesn't exist anymore. We can't step out of it. So for guys like you and me that enjoy our good angry tirades, let's face it. There's plenty of fodder there to step into it. And one thing I did notice, man, God bless this cast, man, everybody could access that anger. It's like, oh, anger? I'll show you anger. You know, man, right. Val, dude, the scene when I get in a fight with my middle son, I am not exaggerating. I weigh like 160, 162 pounds. I'm not a big guy, but dude, Val in the scene picked me up and moved me 4 feet. Like she like she was accessing mom rage, you know. So we all had that in common, and it was pretty crazy on the set because we'd get down to take and Edgar would be like, well then, you know, Edgar's a very dude, man. And he'd be like, well then, yeah. That stuff was real. We were definitely accessing a lot of our 2 inches from anger a lot in it. So it was helpful in that case, man.
Right. And just transitioning a little bit, you had mentioned that you said 160, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was looking at this movie and my very first impression, like, because the first scene is like both you and your wife, or Zach and his wife, are in bed. And Zach gets up first and I'm like, wow, these people are in remarkable shape.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And I work at it hard. I'll tell you something, dude. This is the hardest thing. Growing up Italian, my mother loves sugar. Is such a huge part of our family. Such a huge part. I don't eat sugar and I watch everything that I eat. It's crazy, man. I mean, we're always watching. And my parents live with us now. No, my parents don't not eat sugar. My mother, like every night, there's a dessert out there. So it is totally not fair because these aren't like crappy desserts. These are like awesome desserts, you know, man. And I'm smelling this cake and I'm smelling this pie. So sometimes I just have to go in the other room and bury my face in a pillow so I cannot smell what's going on there. So I appreciate you noticing that. But I'll tell you what, Val sure moved that weight around for me, man. She picked me up. Wham. I was like, I looked at her. He yelled, cut. I looked at her and I'm like, what did you just do? How did you do that, man? You know, but Val's a dancer too. And she's, right. she's, you know, very muscular and works out. And yeah, she's great. She's funny about Val is Val can access anger and humor simultaneously, man. She's got this like, strange balance of both things. So yeah. Yep.
Right. So I can appreciate that, especially the family arguments. My grandmother told me, this is like years ago before she passed, but she had told me that my mother and father would argue so much that I would have the shakes. I never knew that about myself when I was growing up. Like, yeah, she's like, I'm just like a shaking, frail little boy. I didn't know. So I can imagine how you like being angry or being in an angry family or being in a family that argues a lot growing up. But as you say, in your personal experience, it's just something that is momentary. You argue for a little bit, and then after the argument's over, it's like go on, almost like it never happens. Like you never lose that love for the people you grow up with. You never lose that love for your family.
Not at all. And the frequency of it and the level of it is quite stunning to people that haven't witnessed it. Like, you know, you said you grew up with your parents arguing. My parents, who are still together and still love each other and still have a great relationship, oh my God, dude, they would have like ground shaking arguments. Nothing physical, man, but like yelling and breaking furniture. And, you know, I mean, like it was like an Italian opera, man, you know? So I'll tell you a funny story. I was talking to Edgar not that long ago, maybe about a month ago, and we were talking about some different things in the movie and stuff. And, you know, Edgar grew up Hispanic family in Central California. Both his parents, his mom, I can't remember what South American country his dad was born in. He's going to kill me. I think it was Guatemala. I'm not sure. His mom was born in Mexico. But anyway, he said, you know, with Hispanic families, especially first generation ones like himself, there'll be fights. But if that's, you can't cross to that point of that kind of anger and that kind of volatility, because that will have super long-term effects. That will progress. You just can't go there and then go out of it. Like that's one thing, you know, that's so crazy about, with most of the Italian culture, Italian American culture for sure, is I don't know what it is, man. I mean, it's like opera. We just dive in with everything, man. And then we dive out and it's okay. And, you know, we tried to show that in the movie because it is really a dynamic and a reality that definitely exists in my culture. And we wanted to be honest about it and say, okay, well, every culture we all have bits and pieces of each other's cultures and bits and pieces of things that make us who we are and what we do. And we definitely wanted to show that reality in it, man. So, yeah. And I get it. And I understand you being a kid. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two brothers that I actually grew up with. And then I have sisters from, different relationships. So I have one sister that I actually keep up with, and there are rumors of another sister floating out there somewhere.
another big interesting family, like all of our families, man. We all got these stories, man, and that's reality. So when you were growing up and you saw the fighting going on, were you the youngest that was there, or did you have younger siblings that were there when it was going
on? Yeah, I was the oldest. And at the time when I had the shakes, this was had to have been when I was the only child. And then later on, my brothers came along. So, yeah, I was the oldest. And, you know, our father didn't really live with us. But, you know, whenever like he came around, that's when my mom and dad would argue and whatnot. So almost every time they were together, it seems like, at least in my memory, they're fighting about something. It's like I'm not privy to what they're fighting about.
Did you feel compelled to try to referee those fights sometimes as the oldest? Did you feel like, man, I'm going to try to fix this, or I'm going to try to get in the middle of this and fix it? Or was it just such a huge event that you were like, man, I'm not getting anywhere near this situation?
No, I'm not getting anywhere near. Like, first, I'm afraid of my father. So I'm not getting in front of him trying to tell him what to do. Especially, later on, as I got older, like when I approached adulthood, they kind of chilled out. So they didn't really fight as much. I only remember the fights when I was like very young. So I'm like probably 7 or 8 years old. So I'm not getting in the middle of that.
And are they still around? Your parents still alive, man?
Only my mother is alive. My father passed a long time ago.
Okay.
But yeah. So that's.
It's an interesting dynamic. You know, when I left home, man, I was 18 when we were living in San Diego, and I was doing, I was in a theater company down there, and I was getting a little bit of interest from LA agents and stuff. Stuff was kind of starting to happen. And my dad got a transfer with his company to move to Dallas. And I didn't want to live in Dallas, man. Nothing against Dallas. I mean, people are probably sitting there going, man, this dude, you know, he doesn't like the Cowboys. He's not going to, but I really didn't want to live in Dallas. I was out in California. You know, I had a girlfriend at the time who ended up being my first wife. And, you know, I just wasn't going to move. So, dude, I had not lived with my mom and dad since I was 18. So 5 years ago, my parents moved in with us and we got a house together. My parents still live with us. Let me tell you something. That dynamic, that thing, even if you haven't been home for 40 years living in the same place, it doesn't change, man. Some of those dynamics, they stay, man. They're still there and you're still traversing some of those waters and you're still dealing with that stuff. And that's one thing that we tried to also show in the movie too, is, hey man, multi-generational families, a lot of people have to do this now because of finances, because of health reasons. Both my parents have Parkinson's now. And there's a lot of reasons that people have to come together in these situations, choose to come together, don't choose, but needs be that they do come together. And it's not easy, though. No matter how much you love your family, it's not easy. It's a difficult thing to reconcile and to deal with on a daily basis. And it's very, very hard, especially now. I don't know what the situation was for you. For me, which is, I think, the case for a lot of us, I always was trying to prove something to my dad. I was always trying to say, hey, man, look, like, let me show you I can do this. Let me show you I can do that. Let me, you know, and I spent so much of my life trying to prove myself to my dad. And that's a recipe for disaster, man. You can't really try to prove yourself to anybody. You know, I try to prove myself to the man upstairs and to what I believe in my heart is, you know, right. And that's it. But so many of the characters in Game Day, we're trying so hard to prove something. That was such a massive thing. I still got it. I can still, you know, my father's character was, you know, proving that he still could be the head of the house and he still could fix things and he still could do this and he still could do that. You know, the mother was trying to, you know, prove that the family was worthwhile and she was going to keep it all together. And all of us were trying to prove something. This is a difficult thing to do. And it's a very huge, it's a sore spot with us in life. You know, it's a hard, hard thing. So you put families together. Let me tell you, man, all those dynamics, they come crashing back, man.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad you said that. I think I've heard you say that on an earlier interview, was as far as like arguing to prove oneself, because that was one of the things that it was like, well, they're very angry and they're very arguing. But I wasn't quite sure why they were fighting, because normally when people are fighting, it's about money or it's about sex or something else. But then when you said that, I was like, that's what I was missing, was that, yeah, it did seem like that they were fighting to prove themselves. And like one of the things, like there's a normal fight where the son is trying to get, like Zach's trying to get his mother, Teresa, to, that's funny to say it that way, Mother Teresa, too.
Yeah. No, I never put that together. Like Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah, so Zach is trying to get his mother, Teresa, to take treatment for her sickness, right, her illness. Yeah. And she's arguing because she doesn't want to do the sickness. And this is something that, you know, everybody can relate to. Everybody knows that, you know, the mother is scared or frightened or of taking chemo or whatever treatment that might be, or it might be just that she believes that she can carry on without treatment, because there are a lot of people that can carry on that belief. And then there are other arguments, like the argument between Zach and you said Marco was the middle son.
Yeah, Marco.
So, and Marco, and they're kind of arguing about their careers. Like Marco's telling his father, "You're not ever going to make it as an actor," and then the father is like, well, you're not ever going to make it as a musician. And that seems very toxic, because it's like, you're both kind of in the same bag, right? It's like, you're both of you in a profession where you're basically have to prove yourselves to producers or whatever, or to right. club owners to try to get a gig. You're both the father and the son are trying to get a gig, right? And so, and at the same time at the house, you're tearing each other down, right? So that's like, it's like, why are these guys fighting? They should be on the same team. And it seems to me, not only are they trying to prove dominance, or are they trying to prove that, you know, one is better, like they can carry the family. The other thing is that they, I think it's more like the son is kind of bucking the father. Some of that is going on, right? Mm-hmm. And the father's trying to take his son down. So there's a lot of conflict like that. Even like the relationship between Zach and Ben, his father. So it's like Ben trying to assert that he's dominant, even though that he's the guest in his son's home, right? So there's a lot of that going on.
Because it's still that same old thing where, you know, where the males are circling around figuring out, you know, which tree to pee on, man. And there is an element of that too. And there's also this. I think that the interesting thing is that the two characters that fight the most are the two characters that have the same thing in common. They're both actor, musician, they're in that world, which in my dynamic, in my family, my middle son is a musician and an actor, and he has a band called Vita Moxie. I'm going to plug his band. He's a great singer, and they're a terrific band. And he's a songwriter, and he and I, man, I love all my children equally, which means I adore all of my children, but definitely of all my kids, myself and G have definitely had our share of fights more than anyone. And we have the most similar career path. Here's the interesting thing on this, though, is that I noticed a phenomena that happened with me. I've always been blessed to work pretty regularly as an actor and a musician. I've had record deals, I've lost record deals. I've had a couple of years where I would be able to make a living as an actor. And then I had years when I was waiting tables and coaching football and piecing it all together. About 12 years ago, I don't know why or how, but somehow, you know, it occurred to me that when I walk into a room for an audition, or I walk into a stage to play a show for people, that I can't be there for me. I've got to be there for the purpose of whatever the job is that I'm doing. When I go into an audition, I'm not going in there saying, oh man, please like me. Like, I hope I can please make you like me. And what can I do? And I'm so nervous. And I thought she liked me, but maybe she didn't. And just shit is, you know, that thankfully left me. I think it has a lot to do with age. And I think on stage, it's the same thing. If you get on stage as a musician, right? And this is what you're saying to the audience. Man, aren't I bitching? Aren't I great? Don't you think I'm amazing? Come on and love how great I am. Man, you know, people are going to look at you like, get out of my face, man. But if you get up there and you say, I'm here to play music, we're going to have a celebration, we're going to have a good time. You came to hear music, I came to play music. We're going to do this. Not judging, not thinking, does this guy like me? Is this woman buying me? Am I winning? Am I losing? In these scenes with Zach and with Marco, Zach has not learned this lesson yet. Dean had learned this lesson in life. Zach has not learned it. Marco is not learning it. So consequently, Zach is seeing in Marco the very thing that he can't stand in himself. And vice versa. It's a neediness. It's a neediness to say, you are good. You're a good actor. You're going to provide for the family. We all believe in you. Forget it, man. If that's what you're trying to do, it's going to be tough, especially in fields like acting and music, and because people sense it. It's like a bad scent, man. It's like walking in with a bad odor. People feel it, man. And right. These are two characters, a young buck and the older buck, that one guy still hasn't gotten it. He damn well should have by this point. And the younger guy hasn't gotten it yet. So I think it makes those scenes really poignant and real in a lot of ways. So that, right, that's my thought on why those guys definitely, instead of how you put it, they should get along because they're kind of the same guy. That's why not, because they look at each other and go, I know that stink. That's my stink.
Right, right.
I don't like it, man. You know?
Right. So speaking of scenes, I thought one of the most touching scenes in the movie is very near at the end of the movie. So basically, this is like a few months later.
Right.
And it basically kind of shows the end of Teresa's life. So at some point, she actually goes and she gets the chemotherapy or mm-hmm. whatever cancer treatment that she got. And then, you know, she passes away. Mm-hmm. And you see the effect of that on the family. I thought that was very touching. And I thought that was handled absolutely beautifully.
Well, total kudos to Edgar and Brian, our editor as well. They really piece that together beautifully. It's a hard thing, right? I mean, life is difficult in terms of we lose people and we have to keep going, but the impression of those people stay with us in our own DNA, in our own thoughts and everything about us and who we are. And when you lose somebody like that, you know, it's a void. And I think they really handled that super well. So it's definitely kudos to those guys. And thank you for feeling that and noticing that, because I think that's something that we all understand, that feeling of when this huge part of your life was there and now it's not. Wow, it's a heavy thing. And it also forces us to, I don't know, maybe, how do I put this? Carry some of the responsibilities carry on my wayward son. You know, that's what it comes down to. It's like, we got to carry on. And that's, I think that really sparks the situation that occurs, which I don't want to give it away because I want folks to see the movie, but
right,
it definitely sparks some of the decisions that Zach has to make and some of the decisions that Jamie has to make. And you know, Zoe, it's amazing. We don't know how so much we affect the people around us in so many ways. And you know, that's how we live on. Prophetically, losing Tony, the father, was like, and when he was such an encouraging, great guy around the set. And you know, you talk about a guy who did, he's done so much stuff, and he's worked as a producer as well as an actor, and he's a singer and a musician. And you know, he was a super good, influence in terms of who he was and what he did, calming guy on the set. And he will be missed, and definitely so to have a character that we actually lost in the movie and then have an actual actor that we lost, there was a juxtaposition there for sure. And I appreciate you you feeling that. I will tell those guys that you had said that, because I know they took a lot of pride in that, putting that part together. So thank you for noticing that. Yeah,
right, thank you. And as a matter of fact, thank you for being here. I know it's getting late in the day, and I just want to thank you for your graciousness of appearing on the show. This is one of my favorite interviews I've had so far, and I'm really glad you decided to come and join us here on Backlick Cinema.
Likewise, I am blessed and honored to have been here. Who you are screams so loud. You have a decency and just a warmth and intelligence. I appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me. It's been a super fun interview. I sure appreciate it. And thank you for enjoying the movie and letting people know about it. It means a lot to all of us, man.
Sure, no problem. So, ladies and gentlemen, Game Day is, as of this recording, available for rent or purchase from Amazon. So next week is a very special episode with the host of a podcast that I've admired for a while now. I've been listening to them since 2020. And when I look for a geek show, the show that I look for is For Our Nerds. It's hosted by DJ Ben Amin and Tatiana King Jones. Please join us for that episode next week. Follow us on Twitter at Backlick Cinema, or on Facebook or Instagram at Backlick Cinema Podcast for updates, because next week's film is to be determined. Don't forget to contact us with any questions, comments, and suggestions at fanmail@backlickcinema.com. Do you, Dean, have any additional plugs that you want to share with our audience?
Yes, here's my plug. I want to plug love and understanding and empathy and realize we are all in this together. So I want to plug love and peace and people. Be good to each other. That's what we say at the end of every Smoking Cobras concert. Be good to each other. Love each other. One planet, one people, under God. Peace, folks.
Absolutely. And speaking of smoking eagles, did I say it right this time?
Smoking
keep messing it up.
That's all right.
Speaking of smoking cobras, because it's like, I know what the band is and I can't get it out of my mouth. Speaking of smoking cobras, because I listened to a show where you talked about where the band's name came from. It came from the Cobra Shelby.
It did. Absolutely.
Right. Yep. Which smokes if you want to run it that way.
Absolutely.
So the band is the Smoking Cobras. The movie is Game Day. If you want to see the band, if they want to see the band, is there a Smoking Cobras website?
There is. Thank you so much. Sure, appreciate it. Yes, it's www.thesmokingcobras.com. So again, that's www.thesmokingcobras.com for our band. And for the movie, it's www.gamedaythemovie.com. And for the message, it's love each other. That's what we need, man. Tell the truth and love each other. We'll all do our best.
All right. So one last time, if you like this show, then please help us grow. To do that, you can subscribe to the show, rate us or review us on Spotify, Podchaser.com, or Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. And I know that you've enjoyed our guest, so please go and check out Game Day. And whenever you get the chance, go and see Dean himself at one of his Smoking Cobras concert. Believe me, it matters. Be safe. Share a movie from yesteryear with your family. Hug your loved ones. And if you're going to be anything, be outstanding.